Hi guys, this is Doug Wagner. I'm the writer of Plastic and Vinyl, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
Excellent. Stupendous, even.
Oh, boy, pitch perfect.
Yes. Yeah. It's good job. Good job. You're done now.
Yep, all done. All grown up.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of the episode. Yes, indeed.
I sometimes get confused.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does.
Wednesday is the thing that tethers me to the week.
Hump day.
No, comic day.
Comic book day.
Hump day.
Yeah.
I look forward to Wednesday every week. I love it. Love it so much.
Heading on over to Tavern on the Green.
The comics on the train. Yes.
Your boy.
The only thing that makes Wednesday better is if it's a Wednesday with a previews catalog.
Oh, so good.
Yep.
Our boo Mario this past weekend texted me. He's like, "Dude, you got the previews?" I'm like, "Of course I got the previews." I guess he forgot. He didn't get the previews.
Oh, so like, you gave him the code?
I gave him the code.
Nice.
He was mad happy.
I think that's a nice feature.
It is nice, yeah.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, the oft-mentioned previews catalog each month, if you buy the physical copy, there is always a code that you can redeem for the digital version.
Yes. And one of the better things is when your local comic book retailer gives you the previews for free.
Oh, throws it in as part of your membership.
Yeah, ain't nobody paying $5 for that catalog.
No.
I mean, if I had to, I would, because it's pretty much crucial. I cannot abide the PDF version of it.
I purchase it.
But it's like a buck.
Is it like a buck and a quarter or something?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. Just for the printing cost of that book, a dollar and change isn't bad for that. But $5?
It's nothing but ads.
Yeah. It is. That's all it is.
Right. So, yeah. Obviously, yes, it costs Diamond to print it, but I mean, to go beyond like a couple of bucks, it's just greed.
And let's be real. The whole front end of the book, maybe about 50 to 70 pages, do you ever look at that stuff?
No.
I used to, when I used to have that little comic strip, but after COVID, that went away. So I was just like, why am I even going to? I don't even read the letter from the editor anymore.
No. I used to just blow by that, and it's like, oh, look, exactly. You look for what's on sale. Hey, everybody, what up? It's 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 907, and I'm Vince B.
I am 907. I am David A. Price.
That is true, and of course, I am Zeppo Marx.
Oh, nice.
See what he's doing.
Yes, I'm clued. I'm keyed into that. You're not Zeppo. You're Jason Wood, everybody. Here again to talk nothing, but, well, maybe some other things, but mostly comics. Brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com. Mm-hmm. Yes, CheapGraphicNovels.com. Proof in the name, because you can get omnibus editions, trade paperback collections, OGNs, manga, art books, all that stuff for cheap at cheapgraphicnovels.com.
Indeed.
A fraction of what you're going to pay elsewhere. They are the absolute best. And you will love it even more because you're going to place an order. You're going to look around, see the landscape of savings. You're going to buy something. You're going to get an email confirmation saying thank you for ordering from cheapgraphicnovels.com. You're going to say, whoa, 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 stop the bus. Wait a minute. Reply to that email message saying 11 O'Clock Comics told me all about you. Max is going to realize that you're a very smart individual and say, you know what, my friend? You get free shipping on your next order.
Damn straight.
Yep, savings on top of savings. It's like red velvet cake.
Ooh, so good.
Right? The best part about red velvet cake is the icing. And your free shipping on your next... Get out of there. Your free shipping on the next order is your icing on that red velvet cake. So
love it.
CheapGraphicNovels.com.
Ooh, I like that. A little falsetto at the end there.
Yeah.
I learned from the best. Jagger, Prince, you know. Let's talk... before we talk comics, I'm a little rusty.
A few days.
I am drinking, unfortunately, I'm drinking Yingling. It's not horrible. It's fine. It's just fine.
Well, I am an oldie but a goodie. Some pink grapefruit seltzer water.
Ooh, the pink.
Ooh. Yes.
Sink in the pink.
I like this thing.
Yep. Two. I have two of them. I have two of them.
That's right.
Nice. And then one Nestle Quick.
Wait, Nestle Quick?
For the stink,
the pink
yes.
one of the stink, dude.
Oh, I get it. You're dirty.
Now we got
you're dirty boy.
Tonight is a little bit of Bardstown with a splash of Stota Stream.
Splash! Whoop!
Splash.
Is Stota
Stream? That's where it comes from. Is what?
Is Stota Stream anything like Soda Stream? Or?
I said Soda Stream.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Okay.
Sure, that's not your second of the night? The second Genitalic?
It might be. Second Stota Stream.
Nice. It was a great week for comics.
Always is.
An exemplary week. Because this week achieved the impossible. Or what I thought was seemingly impossible. Because
I was surprised.
It actually got me to read a Batman book.
Yeah, I really was surprised.
Case in point, from DC Comics, Batman, Dylan Dog. What? This is crazy town. Written by Roberto Recchioni. With art by Gigi Cavanago and Werther Deladera. With Cavanago and Giovanna. I know.
I wonder what else Werther's done.
Yeah. Rub it in. And Giovanna Nero on colors and Pat Brousseau on letters.
Yes.
This book was hard to ignore.
Clearly, Mr. Anti-Gotham read it and is bringing it up.
Because the art is absolutely incredible. Like, I know we say this all the time. If every Batman book looked like this, I would be reading Batman. Deladera's art is just astounding in this book. I mean, it helps that, I mean, let's be honest. Dylan Dog was the hook got me to read this. Because it's a character I love, thanks to Dark Horse bringing a lot of the translated Bonelli stories over to our shore. But also, there's a horror movie angle to my love of Dylan Dog, and that's De la Morte de l'Amore, the Cemetery Man movie, which is, in essence, Dylan Dog. If you've ever seen Cemetery Man, it is a brilliant horror movie, one of the best Italian horror movies ever, and featuring a character that, for all intents and purposes, is Dylan Dog. But that's neither here nor there. This issue was crazy. The not only in terms of the beautiful art, but the value. It's what, 80-some pages?
Yeah.
And it's only the first issue.
Yeah, of three. Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what this collected edition is going to look like? It is going to be a thing of joy. Well, tell them about it. Don't let me hog the mic. Tell them all about it.
Well, like you, I mean, I'm far less anti-Gotham than you, but I don't regularly read Batman books per se. But yeah, when I saw the Batman Dylan Dog, I thought, that's fun. Like, that's a fun crossover. I need to see this. And like you, I am shockingly well-versed in the character because of the Dylan Dog case files back
then.
Got to be more than a decade ago, but Dark Horse brought them to our loving shores. And I remember, it's weird the things you remember. I remember bringing, because it was like 700 pages, I remember bringing it on a vacation and I read it on the beach, the whole thing. But so know the character really well. And one thing I think people might be surprised to hear is that Dylan Dog, for all of the venerable reputation it has and that we've referenced it a lot of the years, he's a relatively new character. He was created in 1986.
Right.
It's not like some 1920s character that's been in strips forever. It's a relatively new character. So I was with you. I was totally like, I got to check this out. And then unlike you, of course, I was already well-versed in the beautiful art of Werther Deladera. And we should also mention that Kabanago does the, there's like a prologue and he does that. And he just did the Magic Order 3, the third part of the Magic Order.
Yes.
With Mark Miller. So very talented in his own right. And the writer, of course, and that's the other draw here, like you said, Roberto Recchioni, again, for those that may not be aware, Recchioni was the Dylan Dog writer in Italy for the last decade, and often the artist as well, but he didn't always draw it, but he did write it. He just handed over the reins, actually, a few months ago after running it for a decade, but he has been the main force behind the actual Dylan Dog forever. So giving him the chance to write this and bring Batman in makes all the sense in the world. I thought this was a perfect comic book.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is as good as comics, like mainstream comics get, I think. I think it was really well written. I was blown away at all the, like everything you would expect in a Dylan Dog comic was there, but intertwined with the Gotham stuff, right? Like, you got him playing the clarinet badly. Like, that's a trope. You got Groucho Marx as his butler.
Yeah, just Groucho.
Yeah, right. No, I understand. You've got him in that classic, the red shirt. You've got, you know, he was always unlucky in love. He would always, like, meet a woman, and then they'd break up with him, like, that issue or an issue or two later. And that happens here. He bangs out Selina, but she's, like, really not really feeling it beyond that, even though he says he's in love with her. You got Dr. Zabaros, right, which is one of his main archenemies. He's in this, right? You got the zombies. You got, I mean, it's all there. Like, everything is there. And then they do super cool shit. Like, they weave in that the Joker views him almost as like a mentor. And theoretically, if this were canon, Zabaros is the one that talked the Joker out of staying deformed and being the Joker. Back in the day. So, like, just the way they intertwined all these things together, I thought seamlessly. It felt like I was reading a Dylan Dog comic, but it had, you know, all the classic Batman characters in it too. And it's not just Batman. You get Batman, you get Alfred, you get Catwoman, you get Croc, you get Joker. So, like, it's full on, but you get it set in London, which is awesome. So you're not seeing Gotham again for the 8 trillionth time. I just think it was perfect. I can't wait for that. If 2 and 3 are as good as 1, then it's going to be my miniseries of the year.
I was thinking that same thing. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, I am not a huge fan of Selina. But there were times in this issue I'm like, I want to see more Selina. Because what Della Dera, when she's going down, or no, that's not the right choice of words. When she's fighting Killer Croc, like the form of Selina doing her acrobatics, it is exquisite.
Yep. Yeah.
It is just amazing. And again, Killer Croc, you know, whatever, big deal. But rendered by Della Dera, oh my God, this is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And just the interior of the sewers is incredibly rendered. And I hesitate to say this because there's been a lot of really talented people that have drawn Batman. That's, you know, almost redundant to say that. Mm-hmm. But Della Dera's Batman is so freaking good.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there we could heap a ton of praise on this book, and you really need I'm sure you'll agree with what we have to say once you actually see this issue, because it is a remarkable achievement. And I'm guessing that it was in the can. Because how fast is Della Dera?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I believe this was originally solicited or marketed in 2019, and then it got hung up with the pandemic. So I do think it was probably being worked on for a long time.
And that's okay. I want a hardcover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's expected.
The sound effects are beautiful, really smartly placed. Batman is imposing as hell. The Catwoman is absolutely gorgeous. Like, Dylan looks great. And the thing about Dylan Dog is the character was modeled after Rupert Everett.
Yes.
And Rupert Everett is the actor that plays the character in De la Morte, De la More.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. There's a meta layer to that movie.
Because sadly, Brandon Routh plays Dylan Dog in
the
Dylan Dog movie.
Yeah. I like Brandon Routh a lot.
No, I do too.
Yeah, he's no Dylan Dog.
It's got a CW feel to it, though.
Yeah, you really need to see Cemetery Man.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
And Anna Falchi is the love interest. If you are on the precipice of puberty, this woman will throw you straight over the line. Like, she's just absolutely gorgeous. And I know this is not about Cemetery Man, but it is a tie-in to this issue of sorts. I thought this was astounding. And I would never have read this if not for our slackers. Because they were going off on
this. He told you how great Something's Killing the Children is?
No, this book specifically. And I was like, huh, Dylan Dog, what? I didn't even know it was a thing. So I bought it and read it. And I was like, God damn, this thing is great. It is actually, it's absolutely great. I don't know what else to say.
Tell us why you hated the tap.
Why you gotta say that? No, I knew it was a thing because of the DC Connect, but I did not have any real intentions of giving it a shot because I know nothing aside from seeing the Dark Horse reprints, translations, imports, whatever, seeing them solicited back in the day. This is pretty much. Unless he appeared in Dark Horse Presents or something I'm not aware of that I just completely glossed over, forgot about. This is my first Dylan Dog. It's been on my radar. It's something I've you know, if I'd ever seen it at a con, I'd give it a try, but I never haven't sought it out. So I didn't really have much to go on going in. But once you guys said that you were into it, I figured then I'll definitely give it a shot just to at least see what I've been missing. And because I'm also not reading Something's Killing the Children, so I don't have a ton of Werther art to look at in my collection. But this is this was a lot of fun. I really, really did enjoy it. I thought the banter, if you want to call it that, between Dylan Dog and Batman. It's very cute and clever in spots, especially when Batman's talking about working alone. And my man's like, yeah, what about Robin? And just Bruce Wayne showing up at his home to get some, to drill in for some information, and them not trusting each other. The Inspector Block with the makeshift bat signal was a nice touch.
The wounded duck.
Yeah, it looked like a wounded duck. I love that. I was about to show that to Renee. I thought, I mean, yeah, so obviously I don't know if this is actually, like, because he deals with vampires and other creatures of the night. I'm not sure if this is actually Groucho reincarnated, if this is just somebody who looks. I don't know what the connection is here. I don't know.
You're not supposed to know.
Okay.
It's just like, instead of Alfred, he's got Groucho Marx's. And the other funny thing about it is that Dylan is perpetually broke and lives in a one-bedroom apartment, but this dude is his butler. Which is
sort of thing. The only thing, I mean, it was weird to me. I don't know why. I also don't know why this just stuck in my head when I see the panel, but it seemed to be, aside from its Joker being Joker, I'm not sure why he'd bother wasting two bullets on a delivery person when obviously from that range one would do. But the
to be fair, it's an Italian writer, and you have to live in the United States to understand the mechanics of when and how you'd use a gun, because Europeans don't have guns. So
you're right.
It's all conjecture.
Okay, I can go with that. And Joker's prisoner in the prologue. I thought at first it might have been Harley.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
But I don't know, why would he keep her in a cage, and why would he, you know?
Because he's a dick.
Oh yeah, he is. But I mean, the rest of the conversation as he's talking to her, it led me to think it wasn't, and it isn't. But I thought, I also wonder if anybody, like, if Dylan Dog is smart enough, or even if Joker is smart enough, they might, especially since the news reported that Bruce Wayne flew his private jet to London, and now Batman's swinging around London. It shouldn't take a genius to figure out, hey, but,
you know. But God forbid I make fun of the fact that people could tell that Superman is Clark Kent. Yeah.
I mean, that's, apples and oranges here, come on. The art's absolutely fantastic. The story had a nice hook. I'm definitely in for all three issues. I'll see where it's going, and if it is a nice hardcover, I'll definitely order it. But yeah, this was fun, and yeah, I mean, it's Killer Croc, so okay, that's cool. You're going to be in the sewers. You need some big bad monster to tag along with. It's better to have Killer Croc than Riddler or Penguin, but it's got what you like about Batman, and if you're a Dylan Dog fan, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's got things you enjoy about Dylan Dog. So it's a really, really good start. I dug this first issue a lot.
Yes, sir.
I think it was a very pleasant surprise.
It could have been a sort of stink.
I don't want to oversell it, but this is landmark brilliant illustration. Like, I'm pretty confident in saying this is the best looking book on the stands right now.
That's bold. I mean, I'm a big Eldare fan, so I do think that the issue is really beautiful and really well laid out.
But like Latour, Deladera has the line of a fashion illustrator. I think every mark he makes is confident. It's very assured. It's not minimalistic, but he doesn't overstay his welcome with the line.
Right.
I just think it's glorious to look at. It's amazing. Yeah. I'm gobsmacked at just how much I invested myself in this book.
Love it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
I'm a proud owner of a Domino and a Phantom X by Mr. Deladera.
It is a great representation of Batman. It's a great take on Batman. Yep.
Agreed.
Wonderful.
So is Dylan Dog, is his base of operations in London? Because it's at the top of the book.
Yeah,
so,
yep, okay. He lives in London. Yep.
He's a paranormal investigator. That's
right. He's a supernatural investigator, yeah.
Yeah, it's all you need to know, right?
But I wasn't sure since...
Yeah, no, it's...
The creator is Italian, that if he was just in London by happenstance for VA, if that's his base of operations.
That is his base of operations.
In Cemetery Man, he's a... he has a job at a cemetery, where he dispatches, for some reason, the dead don't stay buried. And it's his job to send them on their way, put a bullet in their brains, and rebury them. Like, that's what he... And he lives in this little shack in the cemetery near an abattoir, and it's ridiculous and bleak and glorious at the same time. So if you liked this issue and you don't have a lot of experience with Dylan Dog, just watch the film Cemetery Man. It's on Shudder, it's on AMC Plus. Like it's a lot of places. Severin just released a 4K version of it, and so the movie's making the rounds on streaming. It's a singular experience. The ending is just absolutely perfect ending.
Yeah. I was going to say, to your point about the question about London, he actually lives at 7 Craven Road in honor of Wes Craven.
Nice.
Yeah.
More about comics, my dudes. Come on, pick up the slack. And I want to give credit where it's due. Because our slackers that recommended this book were Neil and Jeff Carter. They got the juices flowing for me, because I would never have known that this book came out if not for our slackers.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, dudes.
Yep.
Good job, bros.
Well done.
There were a bunch of the Southern boys hanging out today. We got a couple pictures in the slack.
I saw that. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's a lot at.
We'll be throwing down majorly come Heroes.
Hells yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
Nice.
Of course.
So what else you have, Jason?
Well, I gave you guys a warning. Oh, I told you this was coming. So, forewarned is forearmed, as they say. Last Man, Volume 2 of 4. The fourth just came out. It's the final, it's the final U.S. Importation of all the Last Man. We have all talked. You can, all you folks can go back into the archives and hear us talk about the first volume back in the day. And we have subsequently been getting other volumes, but not talking about them in honor of this being all wrapped up now. My guy got to catch up. And I won't get real too deep here, but Last Man Volume 2, written by Bastian, Vive, and Balak. I don't know if I'm saying that name right, and Michael Santeville. It is a bande dessinée, and it's a French set of French creators drawn in Europe, but it is unapologetically a manga. It is they refer to it as a manga in their eyes, the way they created it. And for those that don't remember our conversation, in the first volume, we meet a cast of characters who are in a small town that has a fighting festival, and they basically end up, we end up following the story of a young boy named Adrian and his mom Marianne, and Adrian wants to enter this tournament, but he's just a little kid, and he ends up through a series of chaotic turns of event, he ends up partnering up with a stranger from came to town, and of course you can see where this is going. The stranger ends up being a total badass, and they end up winning the tournament. And in the process of that, the dude ends up banging out Adrian's mom and kind of becoming like a foster dad. And then the day after they win the tournament, he bounces inexplicably and loves them and leaves them. And that sets his mom and Adrian off on a quest because she's not having it. She's going to seek him out. And that's where Volume 2 picks up. She and Adrian and Marianne hop on a badass motorcycle, and they head out of their town into the kind of like the strange lands, and have to make their way through a setting that is somewhat evocative of your classic Mad Max post-apocalyptic thing. There are evil biker gangs that, under the guise of being police officers, that are looking to rape her and stuff, and she's having none of it, fortunately. But then she makes her way to a city, and we get to understand the much broader world of Last Man after the entire first volume is focused on the small shire. And during the whole thing, we learn a lot more about Marianne, and she's certainly more than she seems, what her connection is to this town and history. It goes much deeper than Adrian ever would have known. And we also realize that Adrian is also capable of a lot more because of what we see his mom is capable of. And they go through the city trying to find their once important strange lover, and it doesn't, as you can imagine, it doesn't go as planned. We see a lot more of the main antagonists of the story, and we see, like any good manga, all of the personal development is really just window dressing for crazy over the top fighting sequences, it's really well done and super fun. So can't wait to read the subsequent volumes 3 and 4. I'm going to try and do it pretty quickly. These are big volumes. They're like probably 12 to 15 issues of comic in terms of size.
Yeah, over 400 pages.
Yeah. So it's a meaty exercise for sure, but really love it. And we've talked a lot, I've talked a lot about Bastian Vivet's art over the last few years. And he's a very controversial figure, as we talked about a few weeks ago when we were talking about the hardcovers that were just imported over from Fanta. But anyway, regardless of all that, he's an incredible draftsman, and I'm loving this so far.
Well, Hickman's not Hickman.
Kirkman?
Kirkman, yes, thank you. Kirkman said after the first volume came out that if you enjoyed the first volume, you have absolutely no conception of where this series is going to go.
He's right.
He was just like, you haven't seen anything yet. And that, I mean, I loved the first volume. I thought it was great. Mom has a Brigitte Bardot air about her. She's absolutely gorgeous.
Blondie booming.
Yeah. And the last couple pages when she hops on the bike, it's like, man, this woman's hot. But I mean, the juices were flowing with the first volume, but after he said what he said, I was like, wow, I'm locked in. I need to see where this is going. Unfortunately, I haven't kept up, but that's going to change because I don't want, Pinhead Max here to spoil anything.
Oh my Lord, that's hurtful.
It's not so hurtful. It's not hurtful. I'm just kidding. It's joking.
Pinhead Max.
Pinhead Max. 300 pages into the, second volume, so
my man. All right, good.
Another thing I appreciate is that they're keeping the price per volume relatively inexpensive for what you get.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The first handful of pages are in color, like a manga, and then we get to the black and white. But the second volume is just it's practically a 180. From what we saw as far as location, and I mean, we heard
after we talked about the first one, as some people that were familiar with the original version of it, said to us, "Oh, wait, you see, like you just tip of the iceberg." And I thought, "Oh, that's interesting, because it's already a pretty complex, wild book." So yeah, but they appear to be right.
And if there's a scene which reminds me of the movie Bachelor Party, where Adrian Zemed's character is a photographer, and there's this woman that comes in with her young son, and all he's focused on is this woman's breast, and he's like, man, if I was this kid, I'd stay breastfeeding until I was 18, and all I thought about was that, because there's a shower scene in the second volume, and I'm just like, man, this is one lucky fucking kid, but this was. I'm so intrigued by the introduction of the new characters. I have to see where things go, and obviously, what our boy has to do. I mean, whether it's about throwing fights. I mean, Aldon has got his work cut out for him going forward. But yeah, we're getting some more info on him, and obviously a little bit more on Mom, as far as not a lot, but a little bit of her past. So yeah, it's a wild ride, and these are the types of stories that make me happy to be a comic book fan, because I have no idea where it's going, and I'm absolutely along for the ride. It's good shit.
Can confirm.
Truth in advertising. Yes. Well, I have something.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I brought this series up. Speaking of loving the fact that we are comic book fans, this is Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty Super Spring Break Special number 1. A $10 book. Prestige format. Now, before you say, whoa, wait a minute, what about your hard line of not spending more than $3.99 for a book? Well,
it goes right out the door.
It does go out the door when it comes to Rick and Morty, but this is 68 pages. So if you do the math, the average content in a typical issue of Rick and Morty is like 20, 22 pages. So you're getting 60 some pages for 10 bucks. I call that a bargain.
And if you want to argue that we got some more pages for cheaper with Batman Dylan Dog, Oni is an independent publisher.
Yeah, some pages.
So I don't mind.
Right, right.
Spending the extra bucks on that.
Well, okay. Spring Break Special. What's it about? Well, it starts off with Morty actually connecting with a female. Because he has a beret on.
Oh my God.
And this girl's just like, oh, it makes you look so intellectual. And Rick being Rick, he ports in, he and Summer port in and whisk Morty away. And Morty's like, what the fuck? We were having a thing. I was connecting. Rick's like, shut up, Morty. We're going to Spring Break Planet. So they go to Spring Break Planet, where the planet is the entire planet. It's a planet-wide spring break.
That sounds like a good time.
Different than Boob World?
Yes. Well, it is a good thing for some of the characters. And because Morty's Morty, Rick, Summer, they take the portal gun and Summer hides it in a bank of lockers and takes the key and puts it in her butt because they don't want Morty being the buzzkill Morty that he usually is. And when the shit hits the fan and they have to get off the planet. Now, Summer is very uninhibited in this story, and she has relations with a number of men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the shit hits the fan, and they're trying to get the key, and she goes, I'm going to need a burrito to get the key out. And she's like, wait, the burrito's not working. And Rick's like, what? Wait, what are you talking about? She goes, yeah, that Todd guy really pushed it up there pretty far.
Holy shit.
What? I love it. So, what? I love it.
Holy shit. It's crazy. Like, she gets her freak on, man. And so does Rick.
See, okay, now this sounds, I'm not saying this sounds like that episode, but there is an episode where Rick and Summer ditch Morty to go on an adventure and are basically going to like three different planets that are all about to face extinction. And Rick hooks up some chick with three tits.
Oh, Summer, she's in here. She's
oh
in
my
here.
God. Yeah. Yes. Okay, I need to read this. Okay.
Oh, it's
keep
fucked
going.
Up.
Keep going.
So they're on this spring break planet, and it's mostly aliens from across what you know, the universe, but there's another Earthling that shows up, and his name is Mark Skidowski. And of course, Rick says, no, you're Skid Mark. From now on, you're going to be called Skid Mark. And he brutalizes this kid. Uh-huh. He's just another whipping boy that Rick, you know, batters. What else? The thing about it, Morty is Morty, and he becomes attracted to one of the employees. There's an entire race of people that are nothing more than service people. They clean and they cook, and you know they're menial laborers. And Rick's like, let's hang out. And she's like, I can't because I have a job to do. And he's like, well, when are you off? And she's like, what do you mean off? We work and work and work some more. And Rick's like, that's not right. So Rick, or Morty unwittingly stirs up a rebellion among the worker class on this planet. And the killing begins. And Rick is like, God damn it, Morty, you fucked it up again. We were having some fun because Rick wants to be King Spring Break. And he does get the title, but in winning the title, he is to be sacrificed to the gods of this planet. And that's when they need to get out of here and pull the key out of Summer's ass. It's so stupid. Again, with the joy of comics, like, this is all kinds of foul, but I still don't understand why they shorthand expletives. Like, it doesn't make any sense
because
to me.
Because on Adult Swim, they censor it.
Yeah, I know. You said that. But, yeah. I mean, you have a character digging a key out of her ass.
I know. Yeah.
They're going to get pushed up in there.
So it's show, don't tell. It's why we can, you know, show somebody getting their brains blown out. But you can't show anybody getting blown out. So it's America, bro.
There's a little alien that is essentially a diminutive little jellyfish-like alien that lives in a bong. And the bong has cybernetic legs, and this thing just walks around, and it's stoned out of its mind.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But I didn't give you the creative team, and I will do so now. Written by James Asmus and Jim Festante, with illustration by Dean Rankin, Tony Gregory, and Angela Trezino. I just absolutely love... I've grown to love Rick and Morty, and this is another example why. They're part of the games to attain the title of king and queen of Spring Break. It's a chicken fight in a pool, right? So Morty's paired with this woman. She's like, oh, my God, what do you like, 45?
And, oh, my God.
And he takes his lab coat off, and he's got a little Speedo on, and he injects her with fighting cock DNA, and she turns into a chicken, a fighting chicken, and just beheads people, fucking skewers them. An egg flies out of her ass, and she blinds another woman. Like, the pool is filled with blood. And Rick is like, yeah, Spring Break, Rick. And he's got this blood-drenched chicken woman on his shoulders. I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. Morty and this young lady are cleaning this room, and they find a baby. And they actually have a code for a discarded baby. Like she picks up the phone and she's like, yeah, we got a code, whatever, in room thing. And he's like, Morty's like, wait a minute, you have a code for a discarded baby? And she's like, well, it happens more often than you would assume.
Oh, my God. It is Spring Break Planet, I guess, yeah.
And Rick is pinching his nipples in some scenes. Like, it's just crazy, crazy stuff. It is the joy of comics, man. I know it doesn't connect with some people, but for just unfettered pedal to the metal debauchery and well written too. Like, that's one thing I can say about the Rick and Morty. Like, it's base as fuck, but it's always really well written. Like, the jokes are mm-hmm. really, really funny. So if you're in the mood for a really good time and you're as uninhibited as Summer, apparently, just pick this up.
She is a freak.
She is a freak.
There's an episode from the latest season, which is kind of, it's not a clip show, but it's very similar to Morty's Mind Blowers or Interdimensional Cable. And there's a scene where these aliens, these giant robot aliens, are like taking away all the pretty people. And Summer is convinced that she'll be taken away, so she runs out of the house and she goes into the street and she's just like, take me. And nothing happens. And then this woman from across the street opens her door. She comes out, and Summer's like, no, no, it's not real. The news is playing a joke. And all of a sudden, an arm comes down and takes her away. And then her hot neighbor across the street, this dude hunk, comes out. And he just, like, he automatically gets swooped away. So now Summer has to sit there and cry because she's not pretty enough. And then Principal Vagina, no relation, he comes in and he says, oh, you don't cry. You get used to it after a while. And I'm just like, she just can't get a break. And the show is well written. And part of the reason is because one of the series writers is Cody Ziegler, who is writing for Marvel, does Miles Morales and a few other things. So yeah, they've got real strong, competent people working on the show. And that in turn relates to a degree to the comic. I mean, obviously not all the comics have been, and not all the series, not all the minis have been, you know, out of this world compared to the ongoings or like the Spring Break or the manga. But yeah, there's definitely more hits than misses as far as Ani's concerned with the Rick and Morty series.
One of the best jokes, and not a whole lot of people are going to get it, but when the winners of the Spring Break are about to be sacrificed, they're brought to a giant Wicker Man, and Rick goes, oh shit, I got Wicker Man'd. It's so stupid. But you know how anyone who's ever experienced Spring Break knows that t-shirts can erupt on a dime. Like, it's as soon as the people who make the t-shirts get wind of something going on within the community, t-shirts will be made, and the revolutionaries all wear red t-shirts with Morty's face on it and with his fucking beret. And there's an afterword showing what exactly happens to Mark Skidowski, and it's not pretty. So, he almost gets sex, but the woman he's about to have sex with is brutally murdered. So now he can't get off unless some kind of murder is involved. Rick and Morty Super Spring Break Special. Wholesome family fun from Oni Press. Yes, go read it.
For the whole family.
Yeah, if you're the Manson family.
Good Lord. Yes.
Woohoo. What you got, Dap?
Let's see. So I did read the fourth issue of Avengers Twilight. I believe it came out this
week. Yes, sir.
I know.
You good, bro?
No, I am. I am. It's fine. It's all fine. It's all fine. This is fine. I'm the dog with the fire behind me. This is all fine.
He's vexed.
I'm not. You know, I'll definitely. I'll give it to Zdarsky in the fact that I didn't really think this series, this time, the story was going to, I guess, play out the way it is playing out. We are getting an Avengers team. It's slow going building this team as far as getting the members and where we're going. It ends with the fifth issue, next issue, or,
yep.
or yeah. sixth. Okay, so we're penultimate issue, and we're getting to the big crescendo. We've got a team. Thor has arrived. We've got Miss Marvel. We have a new Hawkeye. I'm not going to explain how that came to be. And James Stark has finally been made aware of who has been raising him all this time. And we'll see if...
Dude, that last page is beautiful. That's a great costume design.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kyle Jarvis is not Jim Steranko. It's actually a completely different character. And
yeah, sort of, kind of.
Yeah, sort of, kind of. Maybe not as dirty. But I just, there's, I'll be curious to see how James reacts, what he does in the next issue. He can either go the way most traditional heroic or superhero stories go, he could just continue on a path he's been going on with his entitled rich ass and just that is his fate. But I think Acuna has been on fire with this series. Granted, I am not always the biggest Daniel Acuna mark, but your credit where it's due. He is a phenomenal illustrator, and I think what I like is that we're finding things out as Cap and company find things out. We're not ahead of him. We're not waiting for him to catch up. Whatever the bad guys have in store, what they have planned, and the strings they're pulling, and the pieces that they're putting in place on the chessboard, Cap is playing catch up, and we are as a reader. So it kind of heightens the suspense somewhat because we don't know where if we think, you know, Cap, who is always on the ball, or is just such a great strategic mind, and knows how to plan for anything, to see him kind of, yes, of course, he's older now. He's out of step somewhat. He's been reinvigorated with a version of the Super Soldier Serum. So, he's trying to catch up, but, he's reacting more so than he has in the past. And therefore we, as the reader, are reacting with him, and that's not usually the case with the Avengers or with Captain America. So that's a neat approach, and again, I'll give Zdarsky credit for that. But as far as the new Avengers, America's Avengers, or whatever you want to call them, they may not, looks can be very deceiving.
As far as, damn straight.
And And seeing Tony trying to come to grips with the way the world is. I know we talked about the first issue and we may have had some there was some praise and you'd say it was deserved and thought it might have just been following along the lines of previous Avengers stories that can stand the test of time. I don't know if this is still that series when the fifth issue is done, and it's probably something that we'll have to wait for a while to see where it stands. Right now we got the recency bias, but mm-hmm. I one more issue to go, so I'll be there. But it's a little different than what I thought we were going to get. Doesn't make it bad, just different. And that's because of what I thought, where I thought we were going with it. But getting the flashbacks to H Day and finding out how people moved on past that and survived it. I'm fine with the flashbacks instead of us living that event and then reading a book about the fallout. We're getting it in pieces, and that's fine because H Day isn't, that's not the focus of this story. So I can appreciate that. But I thought getting back to Avengers Mansion and the little nods here and there were a nice touch. But yeah, I think this is definitely a different version of the big bad that our heroes have faced before, and I can appreciate the little twists and turns to that degree. But I just not to beat that horse. I thought we're getting something else, and that's fine. So I am curious to see how the rest of the slackers are taking to it. And if I know Jason is current. I don't know if Vince is, but curious to hear you guys.
No, I'm current. I'm of a totally different opinion on this series now than I was with the first issue.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it squanders the premise of the first issue. The conceit that they established was that the world has gone to shit, and it's going to take the old guard, the original heroes, to get it back. Where if your focus is Captain America, aging, not anywhere near the potency of his glory days, and then you reinstill that potency with the Super Soldier Serum. I thought that was a great premise, where you have the stalwarts of the Marvel Universe taking everything back, where it would be Cap, Thor, Tony, and Luke. This is not that.
Right, yeah. No, this is not.
This is, I think the conceit has been watered down. It's just another what-if story that brings in heroes that do not have the pedigree. I think.
Sure.
Like Kamala, are you serious? We need Kamala to help you? Like, no, it should be the original Avengers. It should be Tony and Steve and Luke and like.
Well, Luke wasn't a Rivian.
No, but he still has paid his dues and has become in the pantheon of quote Avengers. These new, like this new Hawkeye, I don't want this. Don't give me this. This is
ironic that we just did an episode on sidekicks and that.
No, I'm just saying that the going in, it was like it's going to take the Marvel heroes to reclaim what used to be, and that, like, that's an all-time Avengers story to me. Where you got to water it down with this stuff, like with these secondary and tertiary characters that have not
earned it,
proved themselves to me.
I get mm-hmm. it. Well, I get it. I mean, I definitely will agree that it. I don't think it's going to finish up as an all-timer.
Not anywhere close. For me, no,
which it had the potential to with the first issue. Yeah. I agree with that, but I definitely am not as soured on it as you. I still am taking a lot of joy out of it, but part of it is because I think I'm. Our mindsets about those other characters, or even like brand new characters, is just I'm much more amenable to it.
Yeah, I'm not, and I get it. You need to, You need to keep the gene pool fresh. You got to introduce new characters for new readers. That is just the way these universes work, right?
Yeah.
Us old guys who've been reading these for decades, sure, we're not going to be around forever, and it's the new readers that are going to pump, you know. They're going to make the Marvel Universe viable. They're going to still buy this stuff. So who am I to say? But going in, it appeared to me like it was going to be an us against the world type thing, where you have these aging heroes not only reclaiming America, or the world in this case, but trying to latch on to what they once were. Some of that old magic, bring that back.
Yeah.
Like, that's an evergreen story. That's Dark Knight Returns, right? But this is not that. I mean, it helps that it's freaking incredibly gorgeous. Like, I love Acuna's work.
Yeah, Acuna's never looked better to me.
No,
yeah.
I don't. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely a joy to experience this book with his visuals. But the story, I think they dropped the ball.
Fair enough. Well, my inner travels was also going to be Avengers Twilight number 4, so we probably can wrap it up. I guess I'll just throw a quick shout out to the fact that I caught up on Nightwing. I read 101 through 111. And, you know, I will say, I've talked about this book a lot over the last few years. I really do enjoy it. I do think, though, especially after this last series of chunk of that I read, it's so much of my enjoyment of this book is Bruno Redondo, because he hasn't done much of it over the last year and a half. And while I think the story and the characterizations and the supporting cast and all that are still fantastic, I found myself racing through some of the pages with far less interest when other artists were on it. So the reason I'm mentioning it now is because Tom Taylor is wrapping up his run. One of the main villains of the run is in the background has been this villain called Heartless, and his time is coming to the apex, and they're finishing. Tom Taylor's finishing up his Nightwing run this year, and Redondo's back, and so it's very, very nice to see him back, and it makes me very excited to see how he wraps up this run. So my audible inner travels is Nightwing.
Okay, so remember that when we actually get there, people. Oh. Yeah, that was just DAP segment. We didn't even get to the inner travels.
Wait, was it? Oh, I thought that was just inner travels.
No.
Oh, weird. Okay. Wow.
There you go. So everybody,
I didn't know what my inner travels was going to be.
Yeah. So a spoiler.
Assume I went first.
Yes.
Switches it up.
Remember, if you want to get your OGNs, your omnibus editions, your trade paperbacks, and your manga cheaply, you go to cheapgraphicnovels.com, because they have everything you want for not a whole lot of money. Cheapgraphicnovels.com. And while you're at it, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/ 11 o'clock comics. Whole lot of shaking going on over there. So we would love to have you as part of our extended family. So check it out. In your travels, I'm going to do something I rarely do, and that's tout a couple of books I haven't read yet, but I did get them in my box, and I'm just giving you fair warning that I will be talking about these in the very near future. The first is a manga from Kodansha. This is called Eido by Amanu Jaku. It's the first volume. Spot varnish cover. The art is incredibly detailed. Just gorgeous stuff. It says on the back cover, it's targeted to fans of Akira. I don't know how.
You're like, I don't know.
I don't know about that, but I mean, it does have the post, like the dystopian vibe of Akira, and the lead character is a young man who has strange powers and abilities that seem to come to fruition at the very end of this volume. So I can't speak to the story, but the art is absolutely incredible. So that's Eido, Volume 1 by Amano Jaku from Kodansha. And the second thing I want you to read is from Seven Seas. Oh. This is art and story by Masasumi Kazizaki. It's called The Tree of Death, Yomosuhegui. Okay, let me try that again. Tree of Death, Yomosuhegui. It is violent as fuck. Brutal. There's a lot of nudity, a lot of bloodshed. Heads getting bashed in. Incredibly detailed artwork. Some of it Lovecraftian in scope. Yeah, this is not for the faint of heart. But it's the pitch on the back is police officer Nawa Kanetsugu lost almost everything when his wife and daughter were killed. All that remains now is his thirst for vengeance and hunger for the fruit of immortality. But when he takes a bite, he is plunged into the midst of an endless war between the enigmatic and twisted undying and Ren, a single Shinigami looking to restore death to the world. Can Kanetsugu survive? Of course, his body shall, but will his soul? Bum, bum, bum. Really good looking manga. Ridiculously detailed. Very textured. Splatterific art. Like, there's a lot of blood in this thing. So, please, if you would like to play along with me at home, read Edo Volume 1 and Tree of Death, Yomosuhegui Volume 1 from Seven Seas. Both of which came in today, and I was like, damn, these are beautiful.
Gotta love that.
Yeah.
Damn. In your travels. The third issue of Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees by Patrick Horvath and letters by Hassan Otsmani Alahu. The mystery continues as to who the killer in town may actually be. We do get some more insight on some of the other residents in this nice quaint town. Samantha is doing some snooping on her neighbors and her fellow business owners, one in particular. And it's the woman who runs the butcher shop, which is a weird thing in this context. There is this woman is a widow, and but there is somebody in her bed when she goes home at night, and Samantha is trying to get to. Samantha suspects the butcher, and that's why she
for sure.
She goes to the house. And at first, I was like, "This is a weird world, man," because now we're talking about taxidermy, but I don't think so. So it's. I mean, it's just it's. I'm not into kink shaming, so whatever gets by, but it was completely weird. But the way, you know, when you know, there's somebody, the lavender plays a part in trying to deduce who the killer may be. When we're at the when Samantha is in this woman's house, because she has found out that after sneaking around, they you know, she lays all the cards on the table, says what's going on, and they seem to have a respectable parting of ways. And then we're with everybody at a funeral, and then another clue drops. So the whole the mystery aspect of, I mean, what we saw in the first issue and with Samantha being a murderer herself, and that's pretty much taken a backseat. We've completely at this point now, three issues in, I almost forgot that she has a dark side herself. And as she's just like playing, you know, detective and trying to figure out what's going on in her town. It's obviously she has an ulterior motive, so we know why she's doing it. But you know, it's been a minute since she's done the deed herself, so almost forgot that's
dirty what deep, she thunder, does. Cheap.
There you go. So almost forgot about her side hustle, her hobby. But looking at the cover of the next issue, the turns may table. So we'll see. I'm really, you know, the illustrations are the Horvath's art. I really, really like. Curious to see if Patrick decides to do some books with humans in it and how that may look. But as far as the animals go, I dig the look. But I am absolutely anxious to see where we're going. There's a variant cover by Riley Rossmo, which is pretty neat for the third issue.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it looks great.
Big time.
Big doings.
So yeah. Again, thanks to Tony for cluing us into it. I'm way more invested in this book than I thought I would be at the start. And I hope people are checking it out from IDW. So yeah. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, My New Travels for episode 907.
Nice. I just wish the title was a little shorter. it's hard to put it on the featured image because it would take up but then who would know what we're talking about?
You're right. Well, yeah.
It just takes up the entire strip. Like Beneath the Trees would be okay, you're good.
Beneath the Trees Ellipsis. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
Well, nobody plans for our needs, which I don't blame them.
Beneath the Trees Orama.
Yeah. So there you go, everybody. Hey, thank you once again for being here. Do yourself a favor. Buy some new comics and read them. Talk about them. Come on our Facebook page. Talk about them there. Or better yet, jump into our Slack. Check out our Patreon page for that. In the meantime, say goodnight.
Oh, ooh. Yes. That's hot.
Woo! Fun fact, they used to call me Travolta when I was younger because I looked a lot like him.
Damn.
It's good. White suit and everything. Yeah, 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 David.
Nice.
Dude, I would pay so much money to be able to see you disco dance like back in the day.
Cringy. It's freaking cringy. Yeah. What are you going to do? They used to call me Sly or Travolta because I guess resembled those people.
Basically any famous Italian they could think of.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More like Joe Piscopo, but that's cool.
Dick. Big dick.
I didn't say Danny DeVito.
I don't have a gap in my teeth and I don't have curly hair. So
I didn't say Danny DeVito, at least.
You had a deranged nutshell.
Yeah, but you did, kind of.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. I didn't say Danny DeVito says to me. You were thinking Danny DeVito, but you didn't say
I
wasn't
it. Thinking. That never crossed my mind, but we were making jokes about
right. How
people compare you to famous Italian people.
Forget
about Joe Pesci.
I would like to be Joe Pesci. All right, we're out of here, people. Thank you for being. Tell them you love them so much.
Dude, I love you all so much.
Nice.
It's going to mean nothing the way you say it. We say it more often.
It's true.
Jason's very reluctant to say it. Like, he has commitment issues, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's me. If there's, like, I'm the anti-commitment. Like, I've had the same job for 25 years. I've done this freaking thing with you guys for 15 years. I've been the same woman for 30 years. I think commitment is the least of my issues. Yeah. Disco is the thing. I'm sure everybody has a thing or two that they consider like a breakpoint culturally where like they came before them, and disco is the thing for me. I disco is purely historic for me. Like I remember being a little kid and my dad and my stepmom going out disco dancing, but like it was never a thing that I or any of my friends ever did, and it was always historic. And I realized it came right before me. Like if I was a few years older like you, like it would have been a thing for me. So
right. It was all, I always equated disco with Studio 54.
Right.
So disco vis-a-vis became dirty, like something forbidden and debauched.
Oh, wow.
Like Lambada before Lambada.
Well, no, you've heard and read the stories of Studio 54, right?
Of course,
it was just, bacchanalian, that it was just totally corrupt and hedonistic and all that stuff. And that's how I equate that with disco, because that was the culturally, disco was the quote house band of Studio 54. It's strange. Maybe that's on me, but I still see disco as like this completely unfettered, just overindulgent form of expression.
Mm-hmm. So, when I think of disco, this is wild, especially considering my father. But when we lived out west, and my father had cassette tapes, and he had in the console, it was fucking Datsun, Donna Summer, Village People, Bee Gees, and like I would never have thought that this man was digging disco as much as he appears to have been.
But when you look back, right, I think the Bee Gees were like the vanilla disco, where everybody
they were easily consumable.
The common man could listen to the Bee Gees and like find something that resonated with them. But then you got Village People, where it was like, that was a really brave move, because as a 10, 12 year old, it didn't scream gay to me until I actually knew what gay was.
Of course not. Yeah.
Was.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I back now it. Looking back, it's like, holy shit. How were you guys not like the object of scorn from every, heterosexual man on the planet? Like that was just scary that these guys were front and center saying, hey, you know what? There's other lifestyles other than your own. Right. And here we are, and fuck you if you don't get it. But I think it was great. But back then I was like, this is weird. Yeah. What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
Assless pants. Like, okay.
It's like, oh, look at that. A cowboy and an Indian and a cop and a construction worker.
All living together in harmony.
That's awesome. What a country. Now it's like not realizing that Striper is supposed to be like, Christian metal.
But oh, I never liked them. They can burn in hell for all so I'm concerned.
I mean, as far, they had the one hit. If you're a Striper fan, I'm sure they had more than one hit. But they had that one crossover. They had Honestly, which and of course, so that got airplay.
It's the only thing I know about.
Exactly. Yellow and Black Attack. Yep.
Right. Yes. And because of that one fucking song, I get to see them in Kerrang every so often. I'm like, really? I can't
escape. What is that? Is that a Sirius station?
What?
No, Kerrang is Kerrang was a metal magazine from the UK.
Oh, I never heard of it. Sorry.
Oh my god, he's so young.
I knew he would know. No.
You have to know he's not gonna know what it is. Right. Yeah.
It's like it's like some metalhead not knowing what Vibe is. Or The Source.
Right.
I was gonna say The Source, okay.
Right. Gotcha. All right. You're okay.
Hey, respect.
Out of here.
That's it for that one.